Welcome to HealthComm Central, where we unpack theories and frameworks that can help you create more effective communication to improve both health outcomes and health equity. I'm your host, Karen Hilliard, behavioral scientist and longtime communication practitioner. If you're looking for fresh approaches that get real results, you are in the right place. So let's get started. Hello, HealthComm nerds and HealthComm novices. Welcome to another episode of HealthComm Central. Today's episode is part two of my interview with Sandra Krause Quinn. In the first episode of this interview, Sandra helped us connect the dots between what happened during the Tuskegee experiment, impact it had on public health efforts to fight the AIDS epidemic, and then connected that to what happened during the anthrax attacks that came on the heels of 9/11. Today's episode is part two of that interview, and we're going to talk today about the work that Sandra and her co-author Stephen Thomas and others have been doing during the COVID pandemic and the work that remains to be done. So here we go with part two of my interview with Sandra Krause Quinn. You know, I want to get a sense from you of how far we've come now. You know, looking at the most recent research that you've done, the work that you did around what happened during COVID, what kind of progress have we made and what are the gaps that we still need to be working on in terms of both research and practice?
Yeah, that's a great question, not an easy one. So I think we have made some progress. I think in COVID that many were much quicker to recognize that, you know, what was putting African Americans and indeed Latinos as well, Native Americans at risk was not just that there were existing health disparities in terms of burden of premature diseases, but that there were structural components to this. Who were the essential workers? Who worked from home? Who lived in more crowded conditions? Who had to take public transportation, let's say, to get to work? All those things. Who had access to healthcare? So I think there was a quicker recognition that it wasn't an individual's behavior or even perhaps their existing health conditions. It had to consider that broader, where do they live? How many people do they live with? Do they have to go out to work in the public every day, et cetera? So that was good. That I thought was a step forward. And so I think what happened, and certainly in the Communivax coalition that I was part of, was our ethnographic study in six communities across the country, three Latino, three African American. And what we learned in all of those was that, number one, access was still an issue. You know, if you're out working because you've got to drive the trash truck, you can't spend 3 hours on your computer if you have one trying to figure out how to get a vaccine appointment. So what we saw was that there were issues of access still that were serious ones. We saw play out with placement of things like testing clinics and vaccine clinics. And in many places, really hyper-local efforts made a difference. So in Prince George's County, Maryland, where I am, you know, we focused our effort working with a lot of community organizations and our own existing network of barbershops and beauty shops that serve African American and some Latino people and our other networks, you know, churches that we work with, et cetera. So we did a lot of work to get those services like vaccine out into churches, into barbershops, et cetera. But what was clearly important before that was the disinformation about COVID started in the spring of 2020. It didn't start when the vaccine came out. So we had been having dialogues, online forums with experts, with community members first one was in March 2020. So we had a whole foundation of work on why the vaccine was important. So what I'm saying to you is what we learned a couple of things is you've got to take into consideration those social determinants of health, that hyperlocal action, you know, where you're really engaging communities. We also engage our delegates from our General Assembly in Maryland, local officials, health systems, hyperlocal, where you can tailor these things and engage partners to address issues is really important. But here's what we heard, Karen. Here's our dilemma. In the barbershop, they'd say, well, you didn't care about us when we had diabetes and heart disease. You wouldn't care about us now because you might get sick if we infect you. So it has become increasingly hard to get the health systems to come out and do a diabetes education program, come out and do a flu vaccine clinic. You can't get them out. They say, we don't have any money for that anymore. So my fear is while we're making progress, when we do things like that as a system, what happens? You know, we've lost trust again.
It's so interesting that you would bring this up because I was at a APHA annual conference and there was a fantastic panel that I went to there and they were talking about this very issue, the idea that we're not following through on our kind of basic promise to help people with their health in routine situations, in normal times. And so the trust isn't there when we have an emergency like COVID. And the trust isn't going to be there for the next pandemic either, unless we change what's happening related to some of these chronic diseases, related things like diabetes, things like Black maternal child health. And those are the issues that we have to address and that we have to build trust with in order to have trust when we need it in an emergency.
Yes. And it's really, I mean, you know, because of your experience, that doing this kind of community-based work is hard work. And it doesn't necessarily happen 9 to 5. It is often evenings. It is often weekends. And few grants really pay to support this kind of work. So some of it really becomes kind of a labor of love. But we believe that part of why we did better on getting shots into arms, as they say, in some of our shops is from the first flyer in 2020 that said, this is a hoax, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We were talking to people and we didn't say, oh, that's silly. How could you possibly think that? We just kept talking and listening. And finally, people who started at what one of the barbers calls the hell no wall. Hell no, I won't take that vaccine. They started getting the vaccine. Then they're getting their families vaccinated. And then some of their peers are saying, well, you did it. I'll do it. And then as they had some friends die, others came in and said, I'm not sure about doing this, but tell me how to get this vaccine. I need to do it. So, but it had been staying with the conversation.
Are you optimistic that we can do this, that we can uphold that promise and build that trust?
I'm concerned. Do I think we've learned the lessons that would help us do it? Yes. I think in many places we have learned those lessons. But historically, what happens, as you well know, is we do not invest in public health infrastructure and the public health workforce in the way that's necessary. We're a county of almost 1 million people. There were 400 people working in the health department at the start of the pandemic for a population of just short of 1 million. And so what I fear is that we will go back to underfunding public health and to forgetting the lessons that we've learned that you have to have ongoing community engagement. We would argue in our Communivax coalition, and I can send you the link for that, Karen. We would argue that it's critical to find funding models that support community health workers on an ongoing basis, not having it simply be grant focused or hoping they do it because they're committed to their communities. That's not fair. We don't do our jobs just because we're committed. We are committed, but we also get paid. So I think it worries me that we've been through crisis before and we've seemed to forget that in order to be ready to move health equity forward, to help people have, you know, a better quality of life. We can't wait for the next pandemic. That's ongoing work. And it's really vital work so that we not just improve quality of life for people, life expectancy, but also, quite honestly, you know, maintain trust. That's vital.
Any other closing thoughts that you want to add? Anything that you would say, especially to somebody, you know, who's new enough to this world of public health and to health communication, where health equity has always been part of the work that they're doing? Is there anything you would want them to know about the evolution that you've witnessed and what you would hope to see your legacy be? Not that you're stepping away from the work, but, you know, thinking about 10, 20, 30 years from now, what do they need to know that is going to keep this going and keep this trust being built?
Well, that's a good question. So first thing I would say, Karen, is this, is welcome to this struggle. And it is a struggle. But imagine this, you know, when you go to work in public health and working on issues of health equity, you're going to have an impact that makes somebody's life, some family's life, some community's life better. And that's pretty darn good. You know, it's really about, can we do something that contributes to change, that improves people's lives? And what that means, though, is there will be ups and downs, but you're starting at a different point than I started. You're starting at a point where health equity is a topic. Health equity, I mean, equity itself, racial equity just played a role in a major decision here in the DC area on where a federal building was going to be placed. That's new. That's new. The federal government will invest these millions in Prince George's County, a majority minority county. So you're going to have points when we're moving forward and everyone seems interested. And you're going to have points where we may slide backwards. But I think the other thing I would say to you is policy. So think of all the ways that the policy, the laws of our nation make a difference in our lives. How we fund schools makes a difference in the quality of our schools. All these things tie back to health equity. So I would say be the best hardworking public health professional you can be. Work with communities. Don't be afraid to make a mistake. I've made some doozies. Don't be afraid. And recognize that the broader context of social determinants are largely part of a large political process, political and social environment. And those are important for you to attend to as well.
I heard a quote just a day or two ago from, I think it was from Jerome Adams, the former Surgeon General, who said, and I'm paraphrasing here, so I may get it wrong, but it was something to the effect of, your mayor and your legislators have a greater impact on your health than your doctor does. And while I think we understand that in public health, we need to get people outside of public health thinking that way in order to get some of these policies changed and to support the work that we're doing with policy and with funding. This has been a great discussion. I'm so excited to be able to give this history to people and to kind of see where the field has been and get your perspective on where it's going. So thank you again so much for joining me. And I would love to have you back to talk about some other issues. We'll talk offline and see if we can have you come in and maybe address a few other things that I think would be really of interest to the audience. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Karen. It's been my pleasure.
That is it for today's episode and for part two of my interview with Sandra Krause Quinn. If you did not listen to the first part of that interview, you definitely need to go back to it. It's got some history around health equity, the Tuskegee experiment, trust in government, trust in public health that you've probably never heard before. And you definitely need to go back and catch up with that. We are going to be looking at the issue of trust in multiple future episodes. So I hope you will tune in and be there for them. In the meantime, thanks again for tuning in today. Stay well, stay safe, and stay science-based. Bye for now. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment now to leave a rating and review. Be sure to subscribe to HealthCom Central on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you have friends and colleagues who should be part of our community, please share the link.